Blog Talk Radio.
You got the music off now?
I got it down, Rev. I got it down.
Oh, okay. You know how to turn it off, too?
No, sir, I do not. It's automatic. So, okay, I think we have it, sir. How are you today?
All righty. Let's call it again. Greetings. This is Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show, a show about disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice and advocate, voice your concerns, voice your opinion, but please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can better improve your life, such as inclusion into society, living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. Our motto is increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. And behind microphone number two is the hostess with the most, Miss Renee. We consider her our community she does everything. She's like our community Swiss.
It's like one of those
Swiss,
all-in-one
Swiss
tools.
Yeah, I'm like one of those all-in-one tools.
That's me.
Okay. So, again, this is Sight Vision Senior Talk Radio Show. Again, I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Although I've been blind for almost 60 years, when I was a mere lad of 13, a big firecracker, a cherry bomb exploded in my face and blinded me in both eyes. But in spite of that, every morning I rise, I feel blessed, highly favored, and I know God is good. Well, greetings, and how are you today, Miss Renee?
Well, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, I haven't said that in a long time. You've been away from radio broadcasting for a while. What brought you back?
Well, what brought me back is we had the COVID. We had some computer and technology upgrade, and we are glad to be back here with our listening audience to bring entertainment, information, and be informative.
Okay. Well, good enough.
So
well, we're glad to have you back.
And I'm glad to be back, Ms. Renee. Glad to be back. And
okay,
we have
Rev,
a lot of exciting guests.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ms. Renee.
Well, I just was going to say, let me reintroduce you to our past listeners and introduce you to our new listeners. Now, this show is Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. How is that title significant?
It's significant, Ms. Renee, because we are going to have a lot of guests to come on to talk about disability product and services and programs. And in the last year or so since COVID, a lot of new things are happening, a lot of old things that have continuously happened. And we're going to talk a lot about our seniors, because as our society gets older, people are living longer. You know, at one time in Prince George's County, the council used to give a proclamation to anyone that turned 100 years old. And they had to cease doing that because so many people have turned 100, living over 100 now, is no longer a special event. So we really have to start looking at services and products for our seniors.
Okay. Now, Reverend, for people who are new to the program, is it for blind and low vision listeners only?
No. Although Reverend Ray is blind and live in that world and that community, still we also bring information across the board of people with physical disability as well as the autistic spectrum. And now during COVID, we see how important information and raising the awareness of mental health and the people that take care of all of these folks, the caregivers. So this show is broad in the information that it brings for all disabilities.
Okay. Now, Reverend, do you prefer when somebody describes you that you have a disability or that you live with a disability?
Well, again, the language in the thought is, as they used to say, a handicapped person or a person with special needs. We now like to put the person in front of us. So it is like a person with a disability. So you're living with a, and people don't even want to say disability. They want to say you're living with a limited function or you're limited and not make you become disabled. You might not be able to use that, or like somebody that wearing glasses to see. Everybody glasses that the strength is different from one to the other. So, and we don't want to call it an impairment, because the impairment indicate that you can fix it or repair it, or it's some type of machine or something. So it's living with a disability.
Okay. Because I think it's important that we examine the language. As you said, there were words we used to use was part of considered good English language, and we began to ask people in the community, and they said, no, it's offensive. And I think it's important that we listen to how people want to be identified. Now, I don't want to skip over this personhood first. It's hard to say fast. Explain the concept, why names matter. Why is a person with a disability as opposed a handicapped person? Why is that important in the disability community?
Well, just when you mentioned the word handicap, you know, that derived from a beggar, a person that was standing outside with a cap in their hand begging. And so that term has still carried over a handicapped person. So you don't want to give the impression that persons that have a disability is begging. And so they want to put the person first and then the disability, second, that it is a disability that a person with the right tools and the right education and the right accommodation, a reasonable accommodation, can work, can have a credible job, can have a lifestyle that they want to have in terms of being employed, having a career, raising a family, being part of society in the different walks of life, that the right training, the right tools, the right education can afford them.
You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I certainly want to share that with our listeners. But we're going to get a little bit personal today. So I want to start with, you've identified yourself early in the broadcast as a person who's been blind. Can you share your disability with our listeners?
Yes. When I was 13 years old, on 4th of July in Washington, D.C., the heart of Washington, D.C., first time my mother, she was a single parent with six children. I was the oldest boy of two boys and four girls. We was playing with fireworks in the alley. And one went off and exploded in my face and blinded me and, you know, both of my eyes. And then when you know you're 13 and all, you just feel you get an injury and then you're going to recover. And I didn't, you know, recover and got my sight back out. One of my eyes was injured so bad it had to be removed, and I have a prosthesis in that. And then from there, I went to Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, got some skills, learned how to use the Braille, learned how to read and write Braille, learned some cane travel. People call it a stick, but the right term for it is a cane. And I was in my teens then, and then I got to go to Maryland School for the Blind, a residential school with about close to 300 blind students from kindergarten up to 12th grade. And we lived on the campus, and we didn't even use canes. They trained us to be able to, and the campus was designed for us to be able to get around with holding on to a various railings and stuff in the school, the way the school was laid out, that we didn't even use a cane to. We learned cane travel there, but we didn't use a cane daily to be able to get around. And this gave us a lot of independence, a lot of confidence to be able to you know, travel on our own and that kind of thing.
You know, you use the term, and to people who aren't familiar with it, they don't understand what cane travel is. Like, don't you just put your white cane with the red tip out there and just feel for stuff and then walk around it? Is it more nuanced than that?
Yeah, it's a structure to cane travel. And there are various, like anything, there are various techniques, there are various disciplines and different names of how to use a cane. Some people use a cane where they tap the cane from left to right as you're going down the street, so it'll come in contact with anything in front of you. Some people use a technique that they call a drag, that they keep the front of the cane in front of you and drag it from left to right. And then some people have another technique where it's to push. They just have the cane down in front of you, and they just push it, let it slide along the ground as they walk. And then there's different techniques of how you get to the curb, and you locate the curb, and you line yourself up with the curb, and how you listen for the traffic, or there's certain control traffic lights that you can push the button or hear a little beep, and how you get to a set of steps going up, and the cane touch a step, and you know to go up with it, a technique to hold it the way until you get to the top, and you feel no more step, and then you slide the cane out. Then the same way reverse as you come down the step. So there are different techniques how to get to different things.
Well,
all
you
righty,
hear the music,
so.
And the music is always the cue for us to take a break. So on the other side, we'll come back and we'll finish this interview. You are listening to Sight and Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We're heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, we're back to reintroducing our host and our producer, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Reverend, you mentioned the Maryland School for the Blind. You attended the Maryland School for the Blind, which is a boarding school, and that made you fairly independent early on. You said you were about 13 or 14 when you began to attend. Now, some parents prefer that their children with special needs are better educated in their local school. Now, from your experience, what do you feel that Maryland School for the Blind offers you, being a residential student as opposed to perhaps living at home and just going to school during the normal school hours from 8 to 4 or 9 to 3?
Well, you know, Ms. Renee, it's pros and cons to that. Being at a residential school with other blind students, because you're all dealing with the same type of issues, you're able to share how to approach certain things. You're able to share how to deal and cope with certain things. And then you're on an even playing field. As say you want to be on the track team, well, you run it against blind people, and there are certain devices that's there for you. Where if you're in a sighted school, saying if you're a blind person, well, you know, being able to compete on an even keel with sighted individuals, it's going to require more equipment, more technique, more, you know, you just don't feel like you're really a part of it. And so going to a blind school also, you get to a lot of the equipment there that's necessary, being able to live from day to day and learning just minor chores like making up your bed, like doing laundry, like doing the dishes, having certain tasks, where at home on independent living level, your parents and you know, family going to think that you're not capable of doing that. So a lot of times they're going to deny you. They're going to think you're going to get hurt because they love you, you know, and all. And then in terms of residential, now the drawback always a yin and a yang. The yin is that you don't build a closer relationship with your brothers and sisters at home. You don't get to know your community as well as you would like to. And then once you graduate from a school for the blind, well, what they have done is the last 2 years that you go to a residential school, they have a relationship with a local high school that you get to take some classes there. That way prepare you to get people skills to work and integrate yourself with the sighted too. If you're going to go out and get a job where, you know, 9 times out of 10 or almost 10 times out of 10, you're going to be working with sighted people. So you need to get some social skills and all. So it's a yin and yang to residential blind school and being mainstream throughout your education.
So how did you build or strengthen family relationships with your parents and your siblings, seeing that you were gone all week, wasn't it? And then you were home on weekends. How did you, was it anything you were aware of and intentional, or did it just happen because of your sparkling personality?
Well, you know, Ms. Renee, I failed subject to, and the other thing, let me get back to a residential school. Some residential schools, so happen, I live in D.C., and Maryland School for the Blind was only a few hours away, so I was able to, they had a bus that would, you know, take us there, on, pick us up on Friday from school, bring us home, take us back on Sunday. But now, in a lot of cases, they were students that only time they came home was on major holidays. Okay, they stayed there the weekend and all. And so I was fortunate enough to come home on the weekend. But even with that, still building a relationship with the family, you know, you didn't get to know the inside jokes with the family. You didn't get to know the neighborhood kids and get to know their names. I mean, you're already bad enough you couldn't see them. And then try to remember people's names from week to week. And then there was, she wanted to stay on the weekend. And so, and me being as young as I was, I did not really understand. I had to be intentional in spending time. And then, you know, with my siblings, because when you think about, you know, siblings also, they was a lot of justice for them. They didn't know what to do with a blind brother. You know, they didn't know, you know, how to handle that. So it was not, it was a little difficult in terms of building the kind of relationship that I won't say normal, but able-bodied siblings have. It was challenging. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is there a difference? I know people that come to blindness for different reasons. Sometimes it's that they have had sight and then they lose their sight to a disease or an injury, as you did. And then there are others that are born blind. Is the approach for a person born blind and has never seen different than a person who has had some sight or has residual sight even? Is there a difference in how the cane travel is handled, or how even the education of a blind student is handled in a school like Maryland School for the Blind?
Well, you know, from a teacher standpoint, it's a little more easier to teach a blind person had sight before and lost their sight once the blind person accepts the fact that they are blind and now they have to live a new normal. And I say that to say, when a teacher teaches a blind person that's had sight before, if they use an if they teach them to use an illustration like, oh, the ball that you have is round like an orange. Well, the person that has sight before, they seen what an orange is like. So they don't even have to touch the ball. Or they say, you know, a medicine ball is bigger than a basketball. Okay, well, the sighted person, the person that was sighted and lost their sight, they've seen a basketball before. So, but then a person that never seen before, they have no reference to that. So they have to touch it, and that's their starting point. Oh, this is a medicine ball. This is an orange. This is a, and the same thing with colors. You know, you can't say to a person never seen it before, oh, well, brown is lighter than so and so, or the trees are green, or that they have no concept of what that means. So, and another thing, a lot of persons that was born blind, because that's their whole world, they have no idea what doc is. Because if you're totally blind, there's no such thing as doc. It's just like your hand. Your hand can't see. It has no concept of what doc is. And that's a person that was born totally blind. So, and they don't even want to see. I mean, some of them would say, well, no, because they have no concept of what a blue sky is, but what a beautiful picture is, what it is to see, a plane in the sky. So it can be pros and cons on, depends on how a blind person accept they blind, especially one that has sight, lost their sight, and then also depends on at what age a person that's blind lost their sight and at what degree as they losing their sight as they get older, or one day just wake up when they 13, opposed one day when they wake up at 25 or 30 and they was married and had children and have a job. So it just depends on where on that scale of variables that a person loses their sight or start to lose their sight, and then their acceptance of it. And the biggest thing is the support, the family support and friends that they have around them that can make a huge difference. And if they have a spiritual life and what their walk with God is, such a tremendous determination of how the person lived their life from that point on.
Well, you know, you brought up several things that I want to explore a little bit. You talked about family support and how old you are when you lose your sight, and also whether or not you've ever had sight before. You know, our program is called Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. Can you, from conversations with older people who lose their sight, what is the social adjustments that they have to make, and how important is family support?
Well, you know, one of the number one that a person that drove feel, the first thing they'll tell you, that giving their license up, because that is such a symbol of independence, to be able to go out, get in your car, drive where you want to go to, don't have to ask anybody, don't have to wait on anybody. That is such a watershed in your life. So being able to be independent, and as an adult, when you're a child or a teenager, well, the problem there is that, and I'll take teenager, the peer pressure is so great on teenagers on, you know, being popular, wearing the right kind of clothes, being with the right kind of friends. And a person that's blind or have another type of physical disability, well, they just don't fit in as well. And some are very fortunate to find a caring one friend, but for the most part, that's not the case. And so it becomes very, very lonely. Now, at an adult stage in his life, if he or she is married and have the kind of caring family, it can be easy for that person in terms of support if that person accepts the fact that they have a new normal now. But a lot of people, adults, they become somewhat bitter. They become somewhat, you know, why me? You know, why God did? That's why I say it's so important to have a spiritual life as an adult. Because you're going to need that. It's going to come times that you just can't help for saying, Lord, why you did this to me? There are so many other, and I won't say deserving people out there, but people that's, you know, doing all kind of bad things, committing murder and mayhem and all kind of stuff, and it seems like nothing happened to them. So, you know, so here again, it goes back to having the support of family and friends. And that's just so important, you know, so important.
Well, you know, time waits for no man or woman, and either do our breaks. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back on the other side, because I want to explore your spiritual life, and I want to explore something I don't hear that often, is the mental health aspect of losing your sight at different stages in life. So we'll go to break and we'll be back. Catch your breath. And you are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yes, we know it's daylight time now, but it's still 3:00. So we'll see you here next Friday to continue our discussions about sight and vision and how it affects the community and how we can be a part of that. Back to our host, who is sitting in the hot seat today, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
Yes.
Reverend, on the other side of the break, you mentioned two things that I think are important, and I think we'll start with the spiritual life. That feels very human to ask the question, why me? You have dealt with people who are new to blindness. You have dealt with people who have been blind for a long time. How do they reconcile the answer to that question?
Well, you know, it is a individual adjustment. I have the opportunities to be on many blind support groups and other disability support group calls and sessions and all. And they all, you know, deal with it in a different way. But I have found people that have a spiritual and belongs to a church, and not just belongs to a church, but a active member of the church and some ministry and family, I noticed for them, they deal with the loss of having a disability much, much more easier and don't blame God, but understand that maybe this is just a, Romans 8:28, all things work together. And those who really believe that, and they believe maybe they have a special ministry to help other persons that, you know, became disabled. You know, I can think of two. One, the woman, Johnny, a lot of people heard of that that became disabled from her neck down because of a swimming accident. And then the gentleman, Nick, on Life Without Legs, how they have taken their disability and helped others, you know, taking it around the world. And they have they have a spiritual life. So those have been, for those, then those that have not had a spiritual life, I noticed that, you know, that they question the Lord, they question why them? Some of them have been disabled for years and still have not moved on from the depression, from the conflict, you know, within their self or with their surroundings, or have not, you know, they just stuck. They just stuck in that place. So it depends on the variables.
And that's well said. You know, now it is so much more socially acceptable to talk about mental health than it was just a few short years ago. I mean, I'm talking about less than a decade ago. You know, we didn't talk about depression, and we didn't talk about other kinds of mental health that could impact us. And you're talking about the spiritual life. What is your perception? I know you're not a clinician, but what is your perception of the mental health in the blind community? Are there pockets of healthy acceptance? Are there resistance? Is there acceptance? What do you see being in not only a local blind community, but even nationwide, seeing blind people high performing, medium performing, and low performing blind people?
Well, that's a good question that you raised, because the country, our country, United States, and I'm not sure about the world, but because of COVID, mental health has really come to the forefront because of the isolation, you know. And Mother Teresa, when they asked her what was the worst disease, she said it was isolation. And because of the isolation and people did not realize, and sometimes the own person did not realize how isolated they was from other people because of the way they might have lived their life, that their job was their life, that they got up, they had a routine, that they went to work every day, they rode on a bus, they rode in their car, they stopped and got this coffee. They had a routine. And even though they didn't interact with people, they saw people. So when, or even, you know, just coming out their building, if they lived in an apartment building or their home and they saw neighbors and whatever, getting their car. But once the pandemic happened and then people was no longer moving around, people realized how isolated they was, a lot of them, that they didn't have a social network. They was not involved with their family. So the mental health of people started really, really, you know, coming to front, being pushed in front. I had a friend, we call him Gavin Gabe, said that black people, they didn't have depression. They had the blues. And that's because in the black community, you don't, you know, you say white people have depression. Black people have the blues because in the black community, we didn't accept that black people had depression, mental problems, because we didn't have the kind of money that caused that problem. We didn't have the kind of trappings, the world trappings, you know, that we had to worry about climbing up the ladder of wealth or being involved in different groups, that we wanted to become president of the group or we wanted to become the board member, you know. So we didn't deal with that, but we come to find out that even in the black community, and then we start to accept that black community and the compounded with being blind, but also blind, is that the things that we deal with just on a normal basis as being a blind person, now dealing with a world that they're starting to understand mental health as well, is like a double whammy for people, you know, with disability, because a lot of people with disability fall in mental health dealing with their disability. And as I said, and my wife said this, we at one time, they used to, society in the United States here, used to always in the late, in the 50s, say post World War II and pre-World War II. You know, that's what we used to do, even though with the believers, we still look at the B.C., before Christ and after Christ. But now with this pandemic, it's like post-pandemic and, you know, and before pandemic, because things, right, life has really changed for everyone. And mental health is something we really been pushed to the forefront. People don't want to work 5 days a week and 40 hours or 60 hours anymore. They realize, you know, what's important. Family is more important, not just money, not just position. So, you know, people never going to work those kind of hours anymore. And it has a lot to do with their mental health, their mental health.
You know, we are going to do a show on work-life balance. I think that's a really important topic to bring up. And not only that, something you mentioned earlier, you talk about your spiritual life and mental health. We're also going to talk about the acceptance of persons with disability in the church. The church is a wonderful institution, but sometimes we are not accepting as much as we are emotionally, but the physical adjustment and the emotional adjustment that we have. But the clock is running, and I want to move on to another aspect of your life. You mentioned something about having a wife. Back early on, you learned that you're going to be a father. How did you think about how you were going to make a living and take care of this new bundle of joy you were expecting?
Well, Ms. Renee, and again, you know, I was fortunate. I was in a training program to become a so-called, what they call a licensed vendor, a program in the government that blind people was trained to run their own food facility. So I was on that track. So I didn't have a problem in thinking about how I was going to be able to take care my child, but here again, dealing with my blindness in terms of fitting in, and to the young lady that was pregnant, and we wasn't married, and their acceptance of me as being blind, joking, making fun of me, and all, it just made me feel insecure and didn't want to be, subject to that. So when I got to the point where I could financially take care of myself, I just divorced myself from having a relationship with my son, thinking, people would make him feel that his father was blind and tease him. And, but here again, part of mental health. I did not have good mental health of myself and didn't think about going to, and if I had thought about it, someone had suggested me to have counseling and all that, probably could have been avoided, that me and her could have had counseling and what I was feeling and making some decisions together would have been helpful. But here again, as I said, my friend Gavin Gabe said, black people and me being black, we didn't have depression, and depression is a form of mental health, mm-hmm. So because of that, I didn't have a relationship with my son and his mother.
Well, and again, I think it's important that we will explore that, and I thank you for being so candid and so open about your own personal experience. Well, we're going to move on just a little bit. You talked about training. What kind of training were you getting at that time? There were pretty low expectations for persons who were blind or had disabilities. You talk about the term handicap, that the expectation is you would sort of hang out with your hand open and a cap in it. So, how did you learn about a training program, and how did it impact your life?
Well, real quick, remember during the time I lost my sight, it was over 200 million persons in the United States, and they say about 30% of persons with disability. And people with disability of the age that could work, 90% or more did not have jobs. So, and 4% of those who had jobs made, 75% of those that had jobs made less than $4,000 a year. And so therefore, there was not a lot of jobs that a blind person could do or was given the opportunity to do, because they didn't have the kind of technology we have today, where you have computers with software that can read print to you, where you have devices that could look at things and tell you what they were. And so therefore, and even it's still, difficult now for sighted people to accept the fact that a person that's blind or with a disability can do a job. But given the proper tools and training, like the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, that can teach you how to use a cane properly to get around, or then the people use guide dogs that practice came from Germany when Germans in World War II lost their sight, and they trained them with dogs to help them get around mobility-wise, but that came over to the United States in 1929, seeing a guide dog crew started in New Jersey. So it gave people the independence that they could, move around and move quite sprightly instead of with a cane, that, they had to really pay attention where they was going and hitting things and all. And so therefore, with the independence of transportation, and we're given teaching people how to read Braille, and we still have problems getting Braille, certain things put into Braille. So there are some technology things that we can talk about that arm blind people and people with disability across the board to be able to be more employed once the community is more educated in the business community, that these folks can be a valuable employee.
Well, we're going to come back and explore that again, but you know what the music means, right? We have to go to break.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
If you'll hold on, we'll come back for our last segment. And you are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're just tuning in for a new bat with us, you're going to hear Reverend Radio Ray Razor, who is normally our host, but today we have him sitting in our guest chair, and sometimes we refer to it as the hot seat. But today he's sharing some background and some of the thinking behind what helped him decide to make Sight and Vision a reality. So, Rev, I didn't want to cut you off, but you wanted to make another point about blind persons getting the proper training and being able to live and make a good living and work in the workforce.
And as I say, you know, if you can get the right training and you and apply the right equipment that the blind person or person with a disability can be a credible and very good employee, and the American Disability Act that was signed into law 33 years ago, matter of fact, this passed Wednesday the 26th. By senior President George Bush is 8 different entitlements for blind person, anywhere from communications to reasonable accommodations that the federal government, and hope it trickle down to the local, state and local government, that will provide a blind person or person with a disability just some reasonable accommodations to give them the opportunity to be able to be employed.
And, you know, I, as listeners are taking all of this in, I want to remind them that each of these subjects, we're going to be dealing with them in depth, one-on-one. The ADA in and of itself is quite fascinating and interesting, and the application is so different in so many locales, but I think it's so important to understand your rights, which takes me right into my next question, which is, how did you become interested in the well-being of other blind persons?
Well, you know, Ms. Renee, when I lost my sight in 64 as a mere lad of 13, and after going to Maryland School for the Blind and fast-forwarding going to Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, and then, I mean, still being involved with Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, I was like what they call a functioning drunk, you know, where the drunk is alcoholic, but he still goes to work every day and stuff like that. So it appeared nothing was wrong with him. And I worked in the vending program for, you know, a number of years and never accepted the fact that I was part of the blind world until I, you know, started some bad behavior and I got put on probation because I wasn't doing right in my job and all, and I got to go to DC Center for Independent Living and start sharing with a peer counseling group and realized that it wasn't that I had to accept the fact that I was dealing with some blind secrets. And I say blind secret that I just didn't accept being blind, didn't want to be around blind people, doing things that sighted people did wrong. It so started getting in some trouble, some problems. And so I got involved with DC Center for Independent Living, and I became a peer counselor, took the class. And then I, you know, realized that there's I saw a lot in the other persons with disabilities that I saw in myself going down the wrong road of destruction because, you know, I was blind and I didn't feel worthy, didn't want to get married, you know, didn't want to have a family, thought people would be ashamed of me, would make fun of me. And I mean, and this, you know, was during the time, even though I was at the time a successful licensed food contractor, but still not dealing with the inner man of being blind, you know, because I have seen before. I had the money to be able to do some of the things that I would have loved to have been able to see. You know, I mean, me being blind, what difference does it make if I had me a Mercedes Benz? I couldn't see it, so what I care? Blind, what difference did that? I traveled on a cruise or something. I couldn't enjoy the cruise from because I'm only thinking in terms of a sighted person, you know, not thinking in the terms of accepting my blindness, and there's other ways I could enjoy these things, you know, that I could have a Mercedes, yeah, and somebody drive it and drive me nice places, and, yeah, I could go on a cruise and be with somebody that could explain to me, you know, what I didn't think in those terms. So I wanted to be able to reach out and in my own way help other blind people and people with disability to accept the fact that God had a place, a purpose, and a plan for their lives, you know. And we all represent some type of role model for somebody, even though we don't want to be that role model as outstanding basketball player Charles Barkley said. But unfortunately, it's thrust upon us. We might not want to be a role model, but there's people watching us, you know.
Well spoken, and I think as we look forward to other shows that we will be doing in the future, there's so many of the things that you are alluding to today that we will be covering in depth. Now, there are listeners who themselves are affected by blindness or vision loss or someone they know is. What would you say to them, and where do they start?
Well, I would say start by going to our website, smvradio.com, and listen to some of our shows, and we'll have information on there periodically about the different support groups. Now, again, I didn't get a chance to say I'm blessed right now to work for Prince George's County Councilman at Large, Mr. Calvin Hawkins. I'm a constituent service. And I help persons with disability and seniors, my specialty, but all the 967,000 citizens of Prince George County. And one of the first things I will ask them is what is their support group? What is their support group as far as a family? And it's just amazing to me how many people that's blind or with a disability do not have a family support group or friends. So one of the things I will contact them with or put them in touch with is a support group. And one of them is Inspirational 3 support group that meets every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And the person can be anonymous by calling in and just listen. And and there's other groups that I will plug them into to give them the opportunity to not only share, but hear other persons sharing with their journey with having a disability.
And I just want to repeat that website, smvradio.com. That's the letter S is in Sam, N is in Nancy, V is in Victor, radio.com. And Rev, you know, we always make an assumption that somebody has access to a computer. Is there a telephone number or anything else, any other way for a person who is new to blindness or vision loss to contact you or the office of your of your constituent services? And, you know, we keep saying Prince George's County. We're heard all over the country, and Prince George's County is located in the beautiful state of Maryland. But we have contacts in all 50 states. And so they can get help in their own state. But how is there any other way that they can get in touch with you beside a website?
Yes, they can call me at 301-377-6468. 301-377-6468. And that's any time, well, you know, in the government, when you're working for a public official, they say you work 24/7. But please give me a little leeway and try to call me not before 9 and not after 10.
Well, that's a lot of leeway, sir. That's 13 hours. That's a lot of leeway. I'm watching the clock. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut across you.
No, but we also recognize that people problems don't happen between 9 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon, in the evening.
This is very true.
Human
very
problems
true.
Happen 24/7.
This is true. I want to be mindful of our time and get in this last question. What can we expect from Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio in the future?
Well, from our radio show, what you can expect is not just only information, education, and hopefully a little fun and entertainment, but we're going to bring to you the people, the places, and the things from the different organizations that can make a difference in your life. And hopefully it will give you the steps and the tools to put in your toolbox to be able to come independent to the degree where you want to become independent. And that could be just knowing how to live in your house as an adult, to get around in your house, to continue to do the things you used to do with the necessary aids. Or it could mean that you're a person with a disability who wants to continually work in that became disabled, or a person with a disability who never worked and wanted to work. So we will provide you with those necessary agencies, organizations, tools and products and services. So you can get the whole gamut as a person with a disability to be armed and get the information to be on your way to be the type of person you want to be, not who your husband wants you to be, or your wife, or your children, or your who you want to be, because we all have our own independence level that we want to reach, and they all not the same. They all not the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Rev, you said something about coming to blindness later in life, and the I don't know if trauma is the right word, but certainly the adjustment to blindness. If a person does not seem able, and this goes back to our mental health reference, as you lose your sight, et cetera, is it appropriate for, say, a family member to call or go on the website and get this information and present it to the person who may be blind or losing their vision? Is it appropriate for them to take that kind of initiative, or does it overstep the boundaries of a blind person?
No, it won't be overstepping their boundaries. It's just how they present the information to them. They can't beat on them and say, well, you know, you just need to do something and stop sitting around this house, and you need to, you know, get up and just get out of stuck where you are. No, you know, you can share the information with them about, you know, blind people or whatever the person's disability is, of what other people are doing, and maybe some movies or something like that, and share the information. So many people that came to me was through their friends or family saying, you know, Reverend Ray, look at some of the things he's doing, or this fellow named Reverend Ray. And they use other examples like Sean Calloway, another person you'll hear about. And then, you know, some people come right away. Some people take several years, and we'll talk and interview some of those people, how they came to accept their blindness and became very productive in the different disability movements.
Well, Reverend Ray, thank you for being gracious enough to move from your host chair to our guest chair, and I hope that our listeners learned as much as I did. Once again, we want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please visit smvradio.com to get more information about our show, or you can give Reverend Ray a call between 9 and 5, 301-377-6468. That's 301-377-6468. Thank you for tuning in. We look forward to seeing you again next Friday. Reverend Ray, any parting words?
My parting words is that God has a plan and purpose for each of our lives. You just have to trust him. All right?
Well, I think that is the perfect ending. We'll see you here again next week, and you'll be back with your producer hat on.